Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Pan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for the Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest for this morning is Dr. Annie Kagan. Dr. Kagan will be sharing a true life account of her experience of communicating with her deceased brother, Billy, in her latest book, The Afterlife of Billy Fingers. Good morning, Dr. Kagan. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm beautiful this morning. How are you, Johnny? It's a pleasure to be with you.
I'm feeling fantastic. It's wonderful to have you on the air. I love reading your book. The Afterlife of Billy Fingers is a wonderful read. It is very insightful with lots of wisdom and is a definite page-turner. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Yes. Well, I was a very, I was always very creative. I started to write songs at a very early age, like about 12. Mm-hmm. And also, I was very scientific. And lately, in a discussion with a wonderful woman, Margaret Wendt, who's been a psychic all her life, explained to me how the path of my life led me to read this, to write the book, because this was never anything I planned on. And what I came to understand, what I've come to understand, is that I've always been working with energy in one form or another. So at first I was a musician, so music is kind of a vibrational energy. And then I became a chiropractor for many years, and I didn't do the typical chiropractic, but I did something called craniosacral therapy, and I was working with energy, the energy of the cerebral spinal fluid. And then I became an avid meditator, and that was also energy. So all of this seemed to push me in the direction of being able to have this experience and write this book.
Very interesting. So as a child, did you ever experience the true urge of understanding the meaning of life? Because I know you were on this journey about sort of flavoring life in many ways, but to really ask yourself, what is the meaning of life, and perhaps in this case, the nature of love?
Always. I was always on that search. As a matter of fact, my very first song that I ever wrote when I was 13 was called What Lies Beyond This World. And I would say that I was always very introspective and introverted. And while my best friends were cheerleaders, I was writing these very deep, introspective, searching songs. And I also think that having Billy as my older brother, who was a beautiful but troubled soul, really made me look at life, and I didn't understand it. I couldn't understand him. I couldn't understand life. Everything on the surface seemed not to make sense to me. So I think that I've always been kind of a cosmic detective, if you will, trying to find out, well, what's really going on here?
The early part of your book, you talk about yourself in terms of you obviously have a very successful career in the chiropractic world and so forth, and you sort of experience things that kind of led you in a different route. So what are the combination of life experiences basically moved you to pursue the spiritual path?
Yes, great question. I was a very successful chiropractor with A-list patients and lunch with the girls and shopping at Barney's. And I was also, though, a very, very devoted doctor. I really, really cared about my chiropractic patients. And after several years, I found that working with people with a lot of physical problems who are in pain started to get to me, and I started to become kind of sad and often a doctor who's a little bit more detached actually functions a little better. So in order to fortify myself, I decided to start meditating.
Mm-hmm.
And a wonderful teacher kind of just drifted into my life at the moment that I decided, a teacher who's not really around anymore, was quite magical.
Mm-hmm.
And to my shock and amazement, I began meditating 2 to 3 hours a day. But there was a strange side effect, which was instead of being stronger at work, I became even more sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
And now it was harder to work with my patients and be detached. And at the same time, my life in the city became overwhelming. The New York City pace and the noise and the activity level. All I wanted to do was to be alone. I really, really wanted solitude.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that I would just sell my practice, sell what I had, and I moved to a very small little house by the water, not knowing what I was going to do, except I knew I wanted to meditate. I knew I wanted to go back to music. And it seems that my life just took me on this path that set me up to have this incredible experience, because had I stayed in the city, I don't think I ever could have been quiet enough to have this conversation with the other side.
That's fantastic. How did the book come about?
Yes. Well, after I moved to my small little house,
mm-hmm.
in search of myself, my brother died unexpectedly, and I was completely grief-stricken. And one morning, Billy woke me up by talking to me as if there was a hole in my ceiling, calling my name, "Annie, it's me, it's Billy, get up, get up. I'm here, I'm fine." I'm like, "Billy, you can't be here, you're dead." He's like, no, get up and get a notebook." So as I'm walking across the floor, I'm realizing that I'm not sleeping, and I started writing down what he was saying, and that was the beginning of a 2.5-year journey into the mysteries of death.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. In your book, you mentioned also that you have always believed something exists beyond death, but you didn't know quite what it was. Is that sort of something that fueled you to even go further?
No, I was never really that focused on what happened after you died. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I scientifically would think, well, energy has to go somewhere.
Right.
I could never accept the fact that we just died. And also, I think no one in my family was ever really afraid of death for some
mm-hmm.
reason.
Mm-hmm.
There was this just this belief that you went on. So I think if I believed anything, that we just kind of go into a pool of bliss and
mm-hmm.
lose our identity and are in a beautiful place. But I really didn't have a lot of opinions about it.
How is your book different from other books in terms of afterlife? You have some wonderful testimonials for your book, and after reading your book, I can understand why. So tell me, why is your book much different than someone else's?
Yes, Johnny. I think there are several reasons. One reason is that many of the books on this topic are really near-death experiences. And in a near-death experience, many of the elements are the same. But this book begins where theirs ends,
mm-hmm.
because in a near-death experience, you're coming back to Earth and you're remembering the experience. Billy is not coming back to Earth, and he speaks about his experience in real time,
mm-hmm.
as it's happening to him. I think something else that makes the book really different
mm-hmm.
is the subtitle, which is my how my bad boy brother proved to me there's life after death. So, you know, Billy is not a doctor or a lawyer or you know, mm-hmm. he's my bad boy brother. He's mm-hmm. my older brother who always had problems with drugs and alcohol, but he was a real lover of life,
mm-hmm.
and he lived life by his own rules. He was very charismatic. People loved him, and I feel that, you know, one of the surprising things is that he's kind of maintained his personality.
Mm-hmm.
And what he tells us is, first of all, it's very irreverent. He's very
mm-hmm.
funny,
mm-hmm.
like he's always been. And he's kind of a rule breaker. So, you know, he's saying things that are a bit controversial, but that people can really relate to. People
mm-hmm.
really... It's amazing how people tell me that it's not just a story, but it's an experience.
Right.
So, right? So as you're going along with Billy, you kind of experience the wisdom that he's saying. So everybody has a different, they take away something different from reading the book. So I would say
mm-hmm.
that it's very experiential, this book. And it's also very funny and lighthearted. And it makes you feel really good.
Why do you think he contacted you?
Yeah, well, at first I thought he contacted me to comfort me.
Mm-hmm.
And he did, because as soon as he started to talk to me, the atmosphere of his world flowed into me and my grief changed to a kind of euphoria.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was just this personal thing. But over time, I realized that even though I'm probably one of the most private people on the face of the earth, that this story had to be shared. The first time I realized that, I hadn't told anyone about Billy except a small handful
mm-hmm.
of friends who were very close to me. And I took a trip, and I'm sure Billy planned this trip a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I went someplace and I was getting a massage by a total stranger. And I figured, oh, I'm never going to see him again. And I was very, very relaxed. And while he was giving me a massage, I told him about Billy,
mm-hmm.
that my dead brother was talking to me and he was proving to me he was real and this is what he said. And when the massage was over, I saw that this lovely young man who was maybe in his mid-20s was crying.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me that his very young sister, who was just in her teens, had suddenly gotten sick and died. And he was so heartbroken. And he felt that somehow I was a messenger from her, letting him know that her soul still existed. So here, I was so afraid of being seen as this kooky woman who's talking to her dead brother.
Right.
And here, instead, I was a messenger of peace and comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And when that type of thing happened over and over again, I knew that I didn't have the right to keep the story to myself.
That's wonderful, though, because a lot of times when you go through that, I think the challenge of oneself would be, am I dreaming all this thing up myself? Is my mind creating all this stuff?
Absolutely.
Then, so that's a tremendous challenge. But in the book, you had mentioned so many things about how Billy proved to you that he's real. And before we get into that, the other side of the equation, of course, you have skeptics out there. And you're looking at situations, if you believe this, you might be senile and so forth and all that. Or it's strictly about business, I guess, in some ways. We do have a question from one of our listeners this morning, and
yes.
She's asking, do you do or give spiritual channeling? Do you do that?
I absolutely do not do that.
Okay.
No, that is not something that I do. This is enough.
When I look at that, when you answer that, I think that's important because this is a gift and the personal connection that you have between you and your brother.
Yes, and I'm just very conscientious.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been a very conscientious person when I was a doctor and now. And I don't feel like I have the ability to be a medium or a psychic. And so that is not a path that I am pursuing.
Okay. That's interesting. How were you able to confirm that Billy is real? Not something, again, like I said, you have basically concocted
yes.
in your mind.
Yes. Well, when Billy, of course, now at this point in my life, I'm sure in every cell of my body that this experience is true and that we are eternal and that we do go on. But of course, at the beginning, I would just think, how could anybody be speaking to me from another dimension? You know, my mind was not prepared to accept that. And also, frankly, Billy was the last person I expected to offer, you know, a great spiritual vision of life. I mean, he wasn't even very good at life.
Mm-hmm.
And what I loved was that Billy understood how doubtful I was. By the way, I was never doubtful when he was speaking, because when he was speaking, I wasn't really using my mind to listen. I was using my expanded consciousness to listen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But of course, afterwards, it seemed like, oh God, you know, I must be imagining this because I'm so grief-stricken.
Mm-hmm.
But he knew that I felt that, and he promised me that he would prove to me that he was real.
Mm-hmm.
And he did, over and over again. He told me things that I had no way of knowing that proved to be correct. And they're called evidentiary after-death communications, and many people have them,
mm-hmm.
where you're given information outside of your realm of knowledge, and it's correct.
You mentioned about having things happen to whereby you know it's real. As I mentioned to you before the show starts, I lost my mom recently in March, and one of the things that I went through in terms of connecting with her, and it was unique. I was standing in her room one morning. My sister had left her blouse on the armoire, hanging on a hanger, obviously, but this is an interior room.
Yes.
And I was reflecting back on our lives, basically, because I live here in the United States now, and my mom lives in Malaysia.
Yes.
With my sister. And during the process of just thinking about the past, I took a look at the blouse. It suddenly moved. There was a gentle breeze that moved it. I thought my mind were playing tricks on me, and of course, I have to ask this question in terms of, Mom, do you want me to take this blouse with me as a memento back to the United States? If you do, move it. And it moved again. Okay, great. This is a wonderful experience. And then my sister came downstairs, and I had to grab her in and tell her, hey, this is what's going on. This is what happened. This blouse moved. And she saw it, told her, let me ask Mom again. If she wants me to take this blouse home with me, move it. And the blouse moved, and my sister saw it. I mean, I'm talking about literally the blouse moved.
Yes.
And scary, but then what's interesting, the initial thought was you're scared, but then at the same time, I can truly experience what you're talking about in terms of there's some sort of peace coming over us, the tranquility.
There is, because, you know, one in four or five people get these kind of signs,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and we're kind of taught not to believe them.
Mm-hmm.
But really, people in all cultures from the beginning of time, all over the world,
mm-hmm.
have believed that their ancestors communicate with them from the other side and guide them. And it's a very, very beautiful and normal thing to happen, and what it's meant to do, because, you know, even if you know the spirit of someone still exists, you still miss them, you know.
Right.
You still, I always say, God, it would be great if, you know, Billy could come down just like one day a year and I could give him a hug or, you know, and so we miss them, and grief is a very strong emotion, And I feel like these signs are saying to us, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I still exist. We will meet again. And if it could just take that edge off of the grief, just that small amount, it's so comforting. And then here you are sharing your story with all your listeners. And, you know, sometimes people don't get signs, but that's okay. Because all, you know, if your mom exists and my brother exists, everyone still exists.
Very true. The interesting part about what my story is, I had to fly home on an emergency trip, and I was able to catch my mom before she passed on, and I was right there when she took her last breath. And that blouse that I was telling you about is the blouse that she actually wore when she passed on.
Oh,
I did not
wow.
know that. My sister, when she came into the room, she says, Johnny, you need to take this blouse with you as a personal memento. This is what mom had on when she passed on. And the sarong that she wore is on the bed. And of course, these clothing were already washed, but my sister had left it in the room because my mom had mentioned it to her before she passed on.
Wow.
To do all this. So it was quite interesting. And I'm standing there like, you're kidding me, right?
Right. But, you know, what a beautiful story. And then when it happened, Johnny, you probably felt a little shock. It's like a little clearing of the doubt and a little clearing of the nervous system. And it just makes room for an expanded consciousness. It opens your mind
yes.
to the fact, right? Wow.
Yeah.
This really happened. There is a soul. There is a world beyond this one. And what does that mean for us? So I'm so happy you had that experience. And,
yeah.
you know, there's a Facebook page for the book, Afterlife of Billy Fingers. And just since the beginning of the year, we have like 37,000 people.
Fantastic. Sharing
their stories, because people have stories.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a wonderful thing to share these stories and to know that you're not crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed, it's crazy to think that, you know, it's just over, and it's a great blessing, your story.
Mm-hmm. Do you consider yourself as a medium now?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
No. I'm just a normal person who has a crazy bad boy brother who actually, you've read the book, and one of the
yeah.
things you know in the book is that, you know, he led me on a kind of treasure hunt through the book, which I document through the book, to one of the ways he proves that he is indeed real is that he gives me these clues. And he sent me on a treasure hunt. And one of the things that I found were journals that he wrote at the end of his life. And what does he say in the journals? He says, I want to write a spiritual book that will help people and make them laugh and make them feel good and teach them about life. And it's so bizarre that he's actually doing that now that he's on the other side.
Sometimes we need a different mode to express ourselves in different ways. So obviously he found that through the connection with you and the love connection, that is. That's very interesting, because what I felt at that moment when I saw what was happening to me and my sister was the fact that you are truly experiencing the unconditional love, God's love.
Yes, that's beautiful, because it is unconditional love. And the other side, I'm so glad you said that, is a world of unconditional love. Even if you had difficulty, like one of the reasons that I was so sad after Billy died is that during the end of his life, there was a lot of conflict between us because of his drug problems and me trying to help him, and I couldn't help him, and his problems were kind of being very destructive to me. And at the end, we were not in an ideal place together.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the important messages is that once someone passes over, the love is of an unconditional nature. And then one day while I was writing the book, you know, I was crying because he was giving me this beautiful blessing of the pearl and the oyster, and he was blessing me, and I was crying because I felt so guilty about not being able to help him more. And he said, you know, Annie, I know you're sitting there crying now, you know, thinking like, do I forgive you? But maybe the real question is, do you forgive me? Because, you know, he was the one who made my life so difficult. But, you know, and then he goes on to say, you know, but there really is no such thing about guilt and forgiveness, because it's just really about love and choosing this dance that we were going to do together, and that it's all really okay, and that what you do receive from the other side, even if you've had a difficult relationship with someone, is really what you felt, Johnny, which is unconditional love.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a wonderful experience. And the other thing I do want to share, which is, again, because I had this opportunity to be there with my mom right there. I'm talking about kissing her head, stroking her hair, and telling her it's okay for her to leave and go, having her taking the last breath. And one of the things that I experienced is that, you know, in the end, it's not what you have, how much you have in life, whether it's wealth or whatever you want to call it, or you might be a king of a country and so forth. When you're lying down and taking your last breath, we're all equal, the same.
I love that. And there, that is something that Billy really stresses in the book, that no matter what your struggles or your station in life, every single life is equally important, and every single life is a beautiful gift, because, you know, we live in a society where celebrity status is a very widespread thing. And sometimes when people have difficulties in their life, they tend not to love themselves enough. And I think that Billy's message is one of great self-love, and exactly what you're saying, that we are all the same. We're all beautiful, divine children of God, and we're all loved, every single one of us, and we're all unique.
Was there an important message Billy wanted to convey to you about life on Earth?
There are many, many different messages. I think that my absolute favorite is that, you know, he goes through this one phase in the book. That's really a wonderful thing that I learned, is that after you go through the door of death, you're on a great evolutionary journey. And one part of his journey is he goes through a stage called becoming the universe, where he lets go of his identity and he blends into the beautiful universal consciousness, and he incorporates all of these qualities of love and compassion. And then he kind of reconstitutes. And then he tells me, you know, to look up, because a lot of the things he has me Google. I'm Googling all throughout the book these mysterious kind of riddles that he gives me. And I find out that literally every single cell in our body, every element in our body, was made on a forming star or during the explosion of a supernova, and that that the same universal intelligence that runs the universe and keeps the planets in motion is also the same intelligence that breathes our breaths and heals our wounds and makes our hearts beat. And just by envisioning ourselves as the stars and the moon, which I do every day, we are able to access our infinite selves and be touched by our infinite selves instead of just focusing on our problems and our minds. And I think that that, for me, was my favorite thing that he taught me, because it really helps me feel very sparkly and very expanded, and to not always focus on the difficult things, of which there are a multitude. So I have this expanded vision of who we are, all of us. We're all stars.
Very true. What I like about that chapter also, he talks about the universe is within us, because
yes,
the power is within us, that we have control of it. We spend so much time looking outside that we fail sometimes to spend enough time within.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up, Johnny, because I think, you know, that's one of his bad boy things that I love, which is, you know, we run around living our lives by what others think or what others have taught us. And we don't even realize that that our beliefs didn't come from ourselves. And he advises us to look at the things you believe and see if you really believe them. And, you know, in his bad boy way, says, you know, you got to have a couple of beliefs, but choose the ones that make you happy and that make your life alive, and that make you see things in a positive way. Quantum, he talks about, you know, that viewpoint is so much, and that your viewpoint can actually change an event. And he gives a kind of humorous example of a quantum physics experiment that's called Schrodinger's cat. And the real experiment is that there is a cat in a box, and there's a little packet of poison gas, and the experimenter can't see into the box. And if the cat does a certain thing, then the gas will be released and the cat will die. And if the cat doesn't hit the little button, the cat will live. And the purpose of the experiment is to say that unless the experimenter opens the box and observes it, you never know if the cat is dead or alive. And that's a very famous experiment that explains that the observer is part of the experiment. So Billy gives his version, saying, you know, Daddy hated cats and I love cats, and don't you think that that will affect the cat? Like, it won't be a very happy cat if it's with my dad, and it'll be a heavenly creature with me. So that the way that we choose to see things affects those things. And that's one of the wisest things that he's taught me, because whenever I'm feeling very blue, I look at my perspective. How am I viewing this? From what perspective? And I change it, because that's something that people can't take away from us. Sometimes you're stuck in a circumstance, and it may not feel pleasant, but you can change your viewpoint of it. And I think that that's a great, great wisdom. Thank you, Billy, that he has taught me. That's changed my life a lot.
Fantastic. We have a chat room listener that agreed with you, that mentioned that love your book, and ironically had mentioned about the quantum physics connection in the book.
Oh, so there, we're doing quantum physics right now.
That's right. That's right. And again, these are the things that, to make it blunt, I mean, I say this respectfully.
Yes.
Billy obviously does not know quantum physics.
In life, when he was in life.
Right.
I don't think, he doesn't really speak in scientific terms. He speaks in terms that we can understand quantum physics. Okay, like here's a great example from the book. It's like, I really did not want to write this book. At the beginning of the book, I'm just pretending I want to write the book. I just want to talk to Billy. And then it gets to a point where he says, Annie, guess what? You know, we're supposed to be writing this book. And at that point, I get very rebellious and I stop listening to him. I do all these little things. And it's because I don't want to be the crazy woman who wrote a book with her dead brother. That is not a role that I like. And so that's when he starts talking about perspective, and he says, yeah, but, you know, I think a very appealing role is being a cosmic detective, because I happen to love mystery stories, and that's why, you know, the book is a bit of a spiritual thriller, because he was taking me on this journey into the mysteries of death and proving how he's going to prove he's real. And now, so now when I looked at my new role in life as a cosmic detective, I was very turned on by that. So it was, nothing changed except the way I thought about it. And that changed everything.
Very interesting. There are a couple of chapters in the book that I really like. One is Book of Life. Tell us a little bit about that chapter.
Well, Billy, which is a little bit different than the near-death experiences, Billy has many different kinds of ways that he reviews his life. And one of the ways is called the Book of Life. And he meets his guide, and he, I love this description because, you know, we always have this question, is our life all planned out? Or, you know, is there destiny and how much of it can we change? And Billy says that before we come to Earth, each one of us has a book of life, right, Johnny? And he likens it to a child's coloring book where the lines, instead of being in ink, they're in pencil. And so you could change the lines, and also you get to color in the colors any way you want. So you could make it as colorful or as gray or as black and white as you choose. So there's destiny, but destiny is changeable. And there's also the way we play it. And I've learned to play it a little more joyfully.
It's very true. That comes back down to we all have free will.
We all have free will. It's a balance. It's like our life is planned out, but also there's a tremendous amount of freedom inside that plan.
Right. There are two separate but equal forces that govern our life, basically, in everything that we do, love and fear. So if we allow love to exceed our fear, we will experience the harmony and happiness that we seek.
Yes, I think that that's true. And I think that one of the ways that Billy has us get there is also to not be afraid of your fear. Like it's like what does he say? Let the moments fill you. Life on Earth is very temporary. So don't let time just pass. Let the moments and the emotions fill you, the ones that you judge to be good as well as bad. And I think that for me, I'm less afraid of being afraid. I just accept it as one of the different spices of life. And by accepting it, I'm able to just let it pass through me. And I think it's all okay. I think we could dance with all of it. And when we do, I think that love, especially self-love, that's another really interesting thing, is that, you know, all of the things on a spiritual path that we try to be, we want to be loving to others, we want to be compassionate, we want to be kind. I think Billy's take on that is that if you learn true self-love and you're on your own side and you accept your struggles and you accept yourself with all your so-called flaws and you allow this unconditional love to be part of you, just like you felt, Johnny, with your mom, then the things that we strive to be as spiritual seekers happen naturally. You just, when you truly love yourself, you naturally become more loving and compassionate and understanding towards others. So it's always about, like you said, the universe and the power is inside you. It's always about seeking it inside yourself first, and then it just naturally flows into the world.
Right. I look at themes when I read the book, and this is my personal opinion. What I get from it is there's tremendous amount of authenticity, and there's tremendous amount of humility. And obviously, there's a lot of things that are just spoken from the heart.
Thank you. I'm taking that in. Yes, it's really interesting because, you know, you mentioned before, well, what if somebody's a skeptic?
Right.
And I get so many emails. And one of the emails, okay, so for people who haven't read the book, Billy sends me on a great mystery hunt. He gives me clues, and then I Google things, and one of the, I got a an email from someone who said, you know, Annie, as I read the book, I did every single thing that Billy told you to do. He Googled the songs, because Billy will describe, you know, music where he is, and then he'll give me the name of a song that I didn't know that mirrors it. And the email, the man in the email said, and Annie, there's no way you could have made this up. There's just no way, because when you go through the journey, you see no human being could make this up. I certainly couldn't. So thank you for that ultimate compliment. I really appreciate it.
Do you have some other stories that you can share with us in terms of people have encountered or experienced, in this case, afterlife communications?
Yes, I have some wonderful stories. And if you'll allow me, I really want to add your story, because I think it's one of the most beautiful, touching stories that I've heard.
Thank you.
Yeah, it gave me goosebumps. Another one of my favorite stories, and there are so many, is was told to me by a woman who's a shopkeeper in a small town, and most of her customers were very familiar to her, and her dear sister, who she loved very much, who was also kind of a bad girl sister, was very ill, and part of her illness was that she had bruises. Her illness had caused her to have bruises on her, and it was late one night, it was just before closing time, and a stranger walked into the shop, who she had never seen, a stranger, and the woman had bruises on her. And the shopkeeper immediately thought of her sister. And so she felt very compassionate, and they talked a lot, and she asked her, you know, how she was feeling, and they had a very warm, loving encounter. And as the stranger was walking out, she turned to the shopkeeper and said, could you just give me a hug? I just really want a hug from you. And they embraced, and as they embraced, the shopkeeper felt as if she was hugging her sister. And the stranger left, and her sister died like about an hour later.
Wow.
And the shopkeeper just knew that she had no explanation, but she knew that somehow that woman was some kind of a messenger from her sister saying goodbye. And it meant so much to her, and I just love that. I love that story so much. And I just wanted to read a little something that's not in the book, but written by Billy.
Sure.
You know, as a message to people who want to contact the other side. He calls it the quantum ballroom. And he says, this is from Billy, to dance in the quantum ballroom, you don't have to meditate or go on a pilgrimage or worship in any way. You only have to open your mind a little, walk through the doorway, and notice the little clues that pop up here and there. Maybe they'll involve people you've loved who are no longer on Earth. Maybe there'll be coincidences too perfect to be chance. Maybe lights will flicker mysteriously, or the perfect song will come on, or a bird or butterfly will appear that you feel in your heart is a sign. Sure, you can talk yourself out of believing it, but you've decided to come to the ball, to open up, and let the music take you.
That's beautiful. And I love the fact that he uses and you uses the analogy of a dance, the dance of life and dancing our lives together. Because I'm a ballroom dancer, and believe me, it
really? That's amazing, because this is the first time I've ever read that anywhere. And you're a ballroom dancer. I love it.
And one of my late moms, she was a ballroom instructor, and she taught me ballroom dancing. In the dance of life, it takes two. You have to participate. In order for you to lead, you have to follow.
Yes.
But before you follow, you have to own authenticity. And before you own authenticity, you have to possess humility within you.
Wow.
And you have got to be able to speak from the heart, because dancing, emotions, all those are from the heart. What you just mentioned as well, that brings me to the second chapter that I really like in your book. It's about soul tribes. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yes, I love that too, the concept of soul tribes, because there are so many different ways to the source, let's call it. And on Earth, there's so much conflict that goes on about beliefs. Like, if my way is right, then your way is wrong, or maybe your way is right and that's threatening to me. But Billy talks about soul tribes, that although we're one, the divine loves diversity. So there are many different soul tribes. And so we all have these beautiful spiritual families. And although some of us are blessed, like you, Johnny, to have wonderful connections with our families, some people don't feel that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very comforting to know that you do, though, have a soul tribe that you will go home to, who are connected to you even while you're on Earth. And it's such a beautiful concept, because it makes room for all of our differences.
Mm-hmm.
And when you meet someone from your soul tribe, you feel so wonderful and home. But we have so much to learn from those from different tribes. So it's a beautiful way of having oneness and diversity at the same time.
Right. And it's not about soulmate. It's not about your wife, your husband, your spouses.
No.
These are people that you happen to encounter that somehow it sounds like you've known each other forever. That brings us back to the idea again, if you pay attention enough to your environment, the answers are all around you, and you can feel the energy.
You can feel the energy, and the universe will speak to you,
mm-hmm.
if you come to the quantum ballroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, the fact that your mom, who you told a beautiful story about,
mm-hmm.
and that you are ballroom dancers, and that I picked this selection, or Billy picked the selection, truthfully, is, again, it just is another sign. It blows my mind. It just, I got chilled when you said that. Here we are on the air, and it's happening.
I've come to the point in my life to whereby, I mean, we do make plans, but then it's very fluid. I allow the feelings inside to show me where to go, to guide me. My experience with my mom in Malaysia was a very personal one. It truly changed my life, in the sense that it gave me a sense of confidence and knowing that we truly connected, because there's a lot more to the story. And, of course, this show is not about me, it's about you. But all I could say is that I'm a changed person for the better, not that I was worse before, but for the better, that the fact that knowing the love of God exists, and that truly is that connection. The caveat of this whole thing is that I'm an adopted son. I'm not even a blood son.
Mm-hmm.
to have that connection is totally unique.
Wow, so you're a chosen son. I love that. It's a chosen son. Yes, it is unique. And one of the miracles about Billy's words, and I think you've experienced this, is that in his part of the book, because it's a conversation, there is actual light that comes through in his words. I feel like, you know, that love that you're talking about, the kind mm-hmm. of love that transcends this plane,
mm-hmm.
is right there in the words, because people, they have like a spiritual experience when they read the words. And I think it's because somehow that love that you're speaking of
mm-hmm.
is incorporated into the words, and when you read them, you have that experience. And I think that's why people are so drawn to the Facebook page, because I've just taken his quotes
mm-hmm.
and put them with pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you just read a sentence and you're transformed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I thank Billy for giving me this gift, and giving me this gift that I can share with others like you.
Wonderful. We have a question from the chat room.
Yes.
The question is, this person would like to know your opinion on what Billy told you regarding, quote-unquote, everything and nothing, of being the smallest quantum particle and the whole universe at the same time.
Yes. Yes. It's hard to put that in words, but I would point you to the chapter on becoming the universe, because really I think what he's saying is that we are everything and nothing. But the nothing that he's talking about contains the everything. So I am you, you are me, I am the shadow, I am the light. I think, you know, he, in one part where he goes very deeply into all that is, mm-hmm. he says he's the universe, he's the poet, he's the drug addict, he's the seas and the birds. Mm-hmm. It's like there's a way in which we are everything. And I think that the sameness is what mm-hmm. I'm beginning to think. I know this is kind of abstract, but the sameness is what the nothing is.
Right.
You know, that same particle, that God particle,
mm-hmm.
is the smallest and the largest.
Mm-hmm. And you're right. My take is, like, you're talking about that life force, that energy is in everything. It
yes.
cannot be created nor destroyed. It's just been transformed from one form to another. With regards to I'm the drinker, I'm the musician, it's what part of that particle that you chose to put your thoughts and your effort and your energy to quantify it. And that makes a big difference. And in the end, the most important thing, coming back to the fact that I have experienced my mom's departure, you find that, yeah, we are in this body, but that life force is transformed from one to another host, so to speak. And I speak this respectfully, that life force just leaves and go on, and this body, this human form, this suit that we have, decays and pass on.
That's
it's a
right.
cycle. It's a cycle.
It's a cycle, and when you go through the door
mm-hmm.
of death, it is the most.
It's a beginning.
It's a beginning, and
it's
such a vast and complex journey of
right.
evolution, where you're just becoming a divine being, but it doesn't happen all at once. You go through amazing steps. You meet higher beings. They give you love. It transforms you. It's not a static place.
Right.
It's a place of great activity with many births and deaths. And above all, one thing is so beautiful is that on the other side, the fact that we are all eternal divine beings
mm-hmm.
is obvious.
Mm-hmm.
it's not as obvious on this side of things. That's on this side of things. That's one thing we're learning to do.
Right.
Is to see that everywhere.
Very powerful. Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Yes, the book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, iTunes. You could go to my website, afterlifeofbillyfingers.com. But please, even more than that, please go to Facebook, Afterlife of Billy Fingers, for a wonderful community. And also you could download a free chapter there and get to see what we're talking about here, who Billy really is.
The Buddha Billy.
Billy the Buddha. Now, how did you know that's what I call him?
It's in your book, see? I'm trying to prove to you I read your book.
You did indeed.
By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
I would. I'll share my favorite paragraph from Billy that's in the book.
Okay.
Remember this, my darling. What you achieve on earth is only a small part of the deal. If there's a secret I could whisper and that you could keep, it would be that it's all inside you already, every single thing you need. Earth is just a stopover, a kind of game. Make it a star game.
That's beautiful. That's really wonderful. How has this book impacted you personally? Has it enriched your soul?
I'm a completely different person than I was when I began writing the book. And I would say that the main thing that Billy has taught me is to suffer as little as I can and enjoy myself as much as possible.
That's a nice touch. It really is. That's wonderful. That's really wonderful. Dr. Kagan, thank you for the great recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Dr. Kelly Buckley. Dr. Buckley is a dream researcher and a visiting scholar at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley, California. Dr. Buckley and I will be discussing his latest book, Children's Dream, Understanding the Most Memorable Dreams and Nightmares of Childhood. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening. Have a blessed week. Dr. Kagan, thank you again and have a blessed day.
Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you. Bye-bye.